revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Promoting peace, liberty, and prosperity around the clock. LibertyTalk.fm.
Welcome to Living in the Solution with Dr. Elena George. Today we have a guest who hasn't been with us for a while, but he's somebody I respect highly. And again, with the times that we're living in, things are changing rapidly. And I think cancer is one of the ailments that seem to be popping up. It's affected me personally with family and friends and patients who are coming in with cancers that are newly diagnosed, but are far along in stages. And, you know, I know what we eat matters. I know what we think matters. But I really wanted to get a take on what Mr. LaGreca has to say about our environment. You know, what's some of the emotional triggers, if any, that lead us down this road? And so, Brandon, I wanted to thank you so much for joining me today, because I think the book that you've just written, Cancer, Trauma, and Emotions, is timely. And I think a lot of people will take a lot from it. So welcome back to the show.
Well, thanks for having me on, Dr. George, and hello to your listeners.
Now, I know for those listeners who've not been heard your interviews with me before, you come to this topic from a personal standpoint. And is what made you write this book? What was the genesis of this for you?
Yeah, that's right. 10 years ago now, I got a stage 4 non-Hodgkin's lymphoma diagnosis. And at that time, I was already in private practice for 10 years. So, you know, I brought to that experience not only some considerable clinical work for myself, but just collaborating with others and trying to understand the journey of a cancer patient. But the one thing that was lacking, the one book or books that I wish I had read at that time, were ones that kind of walked me through the kind of the mindset of a cancer patient. And how do I have to prepare myself? How do I have to stay engaged in the process? And so the couple things that I took away from that is cancer patients are under an enormous amount of stress, and they need to understand how stress is impacting their illness. And likewise, trauma can come just from the fact of getting a cancer diagnosis, and we have to understand how trauma can be implicated in cancer as a diagnosis. So these are the elements which we call psycho-oncology that I really wanted to integrate into what we're now calling integrative oncology, understanding the entire process from both a holistic and a conventional lens.
That's so out there compared to what, and thoughtful and well-rounded compared to what we as physicians deal with. There's no actual thought revolving around how it happens. It's just the treatment. And if people, it seems to me that if they were more mindful of the things that are more subtle, like trauma, maybe our cancer rates could drop and we could actually reverse this before it becomes, like I think it's trending towards, an epidemic.
Yeah, I recently just read a statistic from the British Medical Journal of Oncology that the global increase of early onset diagnosis, which is, you know, younger than the age of 50, which includes myself when I was diagnosed, from the years 1990 to 2019 has increased 79%.
Wow.
So, yeah, we're dealing in, and it's in now what we're calling in a post-COVID era, that seems like that increase has been even greater, and even greater in younger people. We're talking 20s and 30s now. So it's a whole new world. We've got a lot more stresses on us, both environmental and internally, emotionally as well. And I think both of these things are coming to bear on the problem.
So let's tease it apart then. From the, obviously we know there's simple things, or I guess the common stressors. You lose a loved one, losing your job, which is kind of happening everywhere now. Just becoming an adult, you know, actually leaving your parents' home and starting your life from scratch. Are these the main stressors, or are we talking about bigger things like the political system and just what it means to live in our society now? What do you find is the major trigger?
Yeah, it can be all of those things. You know, one way I'm thinking about it these days, it's a little different, but it's a nice algorithm in a sense, is, you know, a lot of people ask, what is the cause of cancer? Mm-hmm. But I actually break that question down into two and actually maybe three sub-questions. So when they say, what is the cause of cancer, I think of how we get cancer. I think, why we get cancer, and I think who gets cancer. And they each have different subtleties to them. So the how is really the easiest for me. I mean, how we get cancer, the simple answer is exposure to carcinogens. I mean, on a nuts and bolts level, cancer is a genetic disease. What is causing mutation is exposure to environmental carcinogens. However, that doesn't explain why person A might get a certain cancer and person B does not. So the idea of the terrain of the body, what is predisposing us to cancer, right? So all the epigenetic influences weigh pretty heavily, and that is the why we get cancer. And that can include things such as stress and trauma. And then finally, the who gets cancer is something that I rely heavily on in terms of my root in traditional Chinese medicine, which we say, you know, people have constitutions, and some people are more prone to certain things than others. For instance, we identify that there's a type A personality or someone who's more prone to cardiovascular disease. And likewise, you know, medical research has identified that there's a type C personality. There are people who are prone to getting cancer. And so we take all three of these things. We look at our environmental exposures. We look at our internal experience and internal milieu in terms of both mindset and terrain. And we look at constitution. If we put all three of these in a triangle together, that's what really helps us define and explain in many respects why we are getting cancer at increased rates.
Well, if it's a constitution, does that mean you're trapped in that? Or can you, once you learn about what your constitution is, if it's predisposing you, can you change that?
Yeah, it's certainly the latter. So knowing your constitution, you can play to your strengths and your weaknesses. For example, if you're someone that you just know constitutionally that you need more sleep than the average person, now I'd argue we all need 7-8 hours of sleep roughly, but maybe you have a different chronotype, and maybe you're someone who needs to go to bed earlier, or you actually do better going to sleep a little bit later. So being true to something like that. Another example is, you know, people have varying needs for protein in their diet. Some people can get by with far less, some people can get by with far more, depending on their activity levels, you know, their underlying genetics, and so on. So if we understand these things and we can speak to them, then constitution does not need to necessarily equate to determinism.
Is there a way to measure or to test yourself to figure out what constitution you are?
Well, it depends on the angle you take. So, for instance, we just spoke about diet, and there's different ways you can kind of assess what your metabolic type is, for instance, if you're more of a, you know, a fast oxidizer or a slow oxidizer, and there's online tests and such for that. You know, in Chinese medicine, we break things down to yin and yang, you know, what is the fundamental polarity of the universe, so to speak. And so, as an example, someone who has a yin constitution might tend to be more on the cold side. They run more cold. They tend to maybe gain weight more easily. They tend to be more sluggish. And likewise, someone who has a yang constitution, they may tend to be warmer, they tend to be more active, maybe prone to anger more and such. And so there's subsets of those, of course, too. But as you work with practitioners and you do your own personal inquiry, you can kind of see where you fall within the greater scheme of these things and then, again, kind of adjust needs. So, you know, maybe if you are someone who has a colder constitution, you do better with warming foods or spices like ginger and turmeric. And likewise, if you're a warmer constitution, maybe you do better with cool or raw foods and do better with herbs like peppermint, for instance. So, you know, those things can absolutely be determined both through self-examination and then working with holistic providers.
So from the standpoint of the emotional side, I mean, that's different from the standpoint of mindset and your emotional, what you call emotional resilience. What is that exactly?
Well, so I would argue that there is a difference between how we cope with stress and trauma. And here's the metaphor that I'll use. Stress is throwing the little pawns in your lake of stillness that, you know, should be your body mind. And, you know, those pebbles day in and day out and the little ripples that ensue is what we can call stress. And stress is kind of that long-term chronic wear you down kind of thing. Now, that could be both good and bad. You know, we have the term stress and we have the term eustress, the latter being things that are beneficial to you. So, for instance, going to the gym and lifting weights is a stress in the body. It just happens to be one that the body compensates by growing stronger. Now, certain emotional stresses, like, you know, going to work and being in an unfriendly environment day in, day out, can do the opposite. They can kind of wear you down. So our response to those stresses, or what we call allostatic lows, is the collective response to those stresses is what can really either determine with whether we are coping well or we are not. Trauma is a little bit different. Trauma is like taking a big boulder and throwing it in the water that displaces that water. It gets emptied out of our lake, and then suddenly we're left feeling less than we were before. So great examples of this would be someone who clinically tells me, I've never felt the same since, fill in the blank. You know, to me, they're describing a traumatic event that changed the trajectory of their life in a way where they don't feel the same. Maybe they don't feel safe. Maybe they don't feel loved. Maybe they don't feel like they can love themselves, whatever the case may be. And I rely really heavily here, too, on the language of Chinese medicine, where, you know, we say that things that are stressful affect the liver. You know, we have different diagnoses with liver qi stagnation, for instance. The things that affect us on the traumatic level, they say, we say affects the heart. And the heart is the seat of the soul, like the shen, we say in Chinese medicine. And so we have a different diagnosis here. It's called heart shen disturbance. And this really squares well with a lot of indigenous wisdom, which would say, you know, there's this concept of soul loss, where a part of us can almost break off, a part of our soul breaks off at the site of a trauma, and it's our job to reclaim that. So it really, to answer your question, it determines what we are really dealing with. And how we deal with stress then will have a fundamentally different, you know, trajectory than how we're dealing with something like trauma, where we're feeling there's an event that happened in our life which changed how we are perceiving and being in the world. Does that make sense?
It makes absolute, yes. I mean, so how we respond and how we're able to incorporate it sounds like either it's going to be a positive or it's going to be a weight that leads us off the track to disease.
Sure. And then I would argue furthermore that there's a difference between coping with those stresses and traumas on a purely cognitive level. Mm-hmm. So for instance, doing something like, you know, talk therapy or neurofeedback, which can be extremely helpful, or dealing with a trauma where those therapies just don't quite touch it, where we need to really look for a bottom-up therapy, you know, somatic therapies that really embrace our experience of being embodied. And, you know, in some ways, they can almost be spiritual in their reflection of, you know, how have I changed, how am I living and seeing myself in the world, and how I need to approach this differently.
That takes insight, though.
It takes a tremendous amount of, and bravery too,
yeah.
Especially to. But you know, there's great hope in these therapies too. A lot of trauma therapies that are either, you know, spiritually based, and I write about some of them in my book, or that are somatic based. Again, these kind of bottom up therapies. They're not necessarily difficult to do, but they definitely take some initiative. And mm-hmm. and because they're difficult, I'll speak to that for a moment. I think one of the best things we can do first, yeah, especially if we have a history of trauma, is just to don't jump into it right away. I mean, work first on building resilience. You know, get yourself as prepared as you can so that if you have bigger things that you're facing, that you are coming from a better place. And so some of the therapies that I wrote about in my second book about mitigating stress and such, sometimes it takes working with those first, being in a really good place, and then saying, okay, now I'm ready. Now I want to go after something that's a little bit meatier here and deal with some of these traumas that I might have encountered.
Well, I think it's a good place to take our first break, because I want to delve a little deeper into what you just mentioned, because insight and courage and resilience and in some instances probably letting go and being in the present probably matter a lot. So let's take our first break and come back. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living in Solution. We're speaking with Mr. Brandon LaGreca. He's an integrative oncology expert and holistic medicine practitioner. And he also speaks at various engagements. And he's also an author. And we're speaking about his book, among many, but Cancer, Trauma, and Emotions. And before the break, you mentioned how being able to move our trauma, I guess understand our trauma, is key, and the fact that it takes courage. From the standpoint of insight, and this, to me, people tend to get stuck. Something happens, it's happened years ago, and they're living in that moment and that feeling. It never leaves for some reason. It's like it's ground in, like a track. Is that one way that people can, that you can see how they can make themselves ill by not being able to get out of that rut?
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, it's kind of like that old saying, it's often attributed to Einstein, I don't know if it actually is, but, you know, you can't solve a problem with the same level of thinking that created it. And so we definitely have to rise above it. And it's interesting, you know, we obviously have a diagnosis. In fact, it's the only diagnosis in the DSM that deals with trauma, and it's post-traumatic stress syndrome. Mm-hmm. But there's actually a different concept in positive psychology that's emerged. It's called post-traumatic growth. It's just the idea that we, you know, whatever we have faced, we are using those things as handles, as leverage in order to grow from them. You know, one of the books that I read for my research is, of course, Viktor Frankl's amazing work, Man's Search for Meaning, where he details logotherapy. And for your listeners who may not be familiar, I mean, Viktor Frankl was someone who lived through the Holocaust and then came out to form this kind of positive psychology. And he talked a lot about how he survived the Holocaust by finding meaning and helping others through that. And, you know, it's really important work that has taken on many different forms since then, of course. And one of those is this idea of, of post-traumatic growth, that we can have things that happen to us that can spur us on to greater and greater things. We can grow from them. We can help other people. We can evolve as human beings.
I think that would be beneficial to society if we could all do that instead of living in this space where someone's injured, you know, emotionally or as a group, and they never seem to see the thing that is not stagnant. You can change things.
Yeah. Excuse me again. You bring up an interesting point, which is society. And, you know, one of the things that we do as a collective is help each other to heal. Mm-hmm. And that's another theme that came up in my research is, you know, it's more evident in tribal societies, but it could still be very true in, you know, kind of a modern industrialized world, is that, you know, we heal within groups, not just, even though individually something may have happened to us. You know, we heal by in communication with and in consolation with other people. And so that takes many different forms. I mean, that could be one trusted person as a therapist, but it can also be a religious organization, you know, that is a church that you belong to. It could be a family that have maybe gone through some of the similar things that together you are talking about and healing from that. So isolation seems to be the one thing that holds people back from that post-traumatic growth. And working within groups and working together can help restore trust. And so very key to this discussion is making sure that we connect with the right resources and the right people who guide us through that journey.
So in terms of that, I mean, there's, you know, your typical medication route, which I'm not sure works all that well, and using the, you know, Eastern modalities, things like energy medicine, Reiki or Qigong. Those are the type of modalities that you're speaking about, right? In terms of moving energy, in terms of moving this weight out of the body so that you can have enough reserve to start visiting it.
Yeah, those can be very helpful. And then there's also the subset of therapies that are very specific towards trauma. I'll give you a couple examples. One is EMDR, which is a therapy that you work with a therapist, and there's this kind of thinking of the brain with moving this pattern back and forth between the left. It's got its original name for how the eyes are used. But anytime you just kind of have this back and forth pendulation between the left and right side of the body through a visual cue or an auditory cue or even a kinesthetic cue, it can kind of help to take traumas that are in our working memory and kind of disconnect the charge that's associated with them. And that's one of these more like top-down therapies like neurofeedback. Another example, though, would be a somatic therapy, and there's one that I write about in my book called Somatic Experiencing by Peter Levine. And this is a really interesting concept. This is the idea that when animals encounter traumatic experiences in nature, let's say it's a gazelle being chased by a lion, and if that hunt is not consummated, let's say the gazelle eventually got away, but before that, it played dead. You know, there was the shock experience, right? This is what trauma is. It's this disassociation. So that gazelle just played dead. The lion took off for whatever reason, and then the gazelle gets up. The first thing that happens, and you can see video of this online, it's really interesting, is the gazelle will start having this entire body tremor. It just starts shaking. And the observation here is that it's almost like a discharge of all the stress hormones and everything that was pumping through the body. So even though we've had this extreme parasympathetic state of dissociation, right? You know, it's not fight, it's not flight. It's actually freeze, the freeze response. The body needs to discharge that somehow, and the shaking seems to do that. So in this example, if you were to go to a somatic experiencing provider, they might talk you through a trauma and to the point where you might start having this slight tremor in the body. But instead of holding that back, you were encouraged to fully express that. And by doing so, it's almost as if that trauma then lifts from its connection viscerally to the body. So these are examples of different therapies specifically designed for treating trauma that can really get to the root of it.
That's awesome, because it seems to be you're participating in it, but it's, you're being guided through it, right?
Absolutely.
And what about things like bioresonance and binaural beats and things like that to entrain your brain to get you out of the sympathetic response? Do those have any value?
Yeah, very helpful. I wrote about them a bit more in my second book, more about the stress piece. But they're great tools. I mean, I use them myself daily, in fact, audio meditations and such that have brainwave entrainment frequencies. They definitely help in terms of building resilience. They certainly can change someone's stress, their perception of stress and their set point in relationship to it. So extremely helpful. I will, with one interesting side note to that, though, is that, you know, it almost seems like when we can get into deeper and deeper states, that there can be a repatterning that happens. So you mentioned this earlier that, you know, it's almost like we've made tracks, mm-hmm. and then we get stuck in these ruts. So how do we get out of those? Well, one thing is, you know, certain meditations and into another therapy that I do mention in my book is psychedelics and psychedelic-assisted psychotherapy, which is seeing quite the renaissance right now. Mm-hmm. These kinds of things. Now, either you're doing it through meditation and listening to these brainwave entrainment, you know, tracks, or something like psychedelics, which also very potently, you know, alter brainwaves and such too. It seems like the common element there is this kind of disengaging of, you know, this executive function in the prefrontal cortex, and then allowing, as if it was, you know, a ski metaphor. There's fresh powder. You know, you can now carve out a new path down the mountain by doing so. So very key that you brought that up. Absolutely.
You know, it's interesting. I just wanted to revisit one thing you said about the emotional charge. You know, I find, and I think as I've gotten older, you know, you have things that trigger you. And now that I've become more mature of how I handle my emotions, I find that I move forward when it no longer causes me to feel a certain way. Not anger, just, it's like I'm a bystander. It's happened. I get it. I'm no longer taken back by it. Is that how people, one of the things that people, let people know that they've moved forward, that they're not feeling depressed or anxious or pissed about something that's happened or somebody that they've dealt with? It's like, okay, it's done. I'm moving on. Is that some of the release of the emotion? Is that medicinal.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're definitely better off than me. I'm still working to get there. which we all are. But,
we always are.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, one of the ways that we define trauma is not necessarily what happens to you, but how you have perceived what happens to you, right? Mm-hmm. Because, you know, you can have the same event happen to, let's say, a car accident. There's two children in the car, but in the instant of one starts to, you know, motivate themselves to try to get out and maybe help their sibling out, how they moved through that, they will have a different perception looking back at that. But the other sibling went into shock and they froze in that moment. Now their body's going to have almost like an imprint to that trauma. So as you say, as we spiritually evolve, as we work through our traumas, as we work through our stresses, a good indication that we're doing well is that when things come up, whether it be small stresses or maybe something like a traumatic event that we're witnessing, how do we move through it? Can we move through it with grace? Can we, even if it's something that brings our heart rate up or, you know, initiates that stress response, how fast do we come back down from that? These are all indicators that we are more resilient in the face of those things and we can move through them much more quickly.
I love that. We're going to take a break in a second, but I want to preview the next segment, but what I want to discuss. And that's, you know, these modalities in a little bit more detail, because I know what bioresonance is. I think, you know, you know what it is, but our listeners may not really understand how that patterning and an energy. I think everything's about energy, right? From a cellular standpoint, either we're infused with it or we get sucked out. And there's ways that that's how I think about it. You recharge yourself. You're able to sink in a different way so that you move forward instead of falling back into the same patterns of action and feelings. And I'll let you answer that when we come back. So let's take our second break. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living in Solution. We're speaking with Brendan LaGreca, and you can go to his website, brendanlagreca.com. There you can read everything he writes, and I think you can also buy the book from the site, can't you?
Yeah, you can. Now it's available through all online retailers as well.
Awesome. So before the break, my question was, what are some of the ways that people can move forward and actually jump into these understanding bioresonance and energy? Because it's all about cellular energy, isn't it? Do you think that disease is a cellular issue, right? Cells die, they don't detox themselves properly, and we're not able to recover. Our resilience is gone. Is that the same way you should think about disease in general and our emotional state?
Yeah, in some ways that actually comes full circle to, you know, how trauma relates to cancer and other diseases. And, you know, in Chinese medicine, we obviously say that the body's animated, and we call it qi, the substance that animates the body. And it's a subtle, right, subtle energy. And things like trauma cause a disruption in that energy and how that it's moving through the body. And that's the site of where the disease begins. It's at the core of it in the sense that it causes a ripple within the energy field. So addressing it on that level is absolutely 100% getting at the root cause of what the problem is. So as it relates to trauma, you know, I spoke earlier about kind of like this idea of soul loss, like a part of your soul is left behind in the trauma. I mean, I think there's we can take that literally. Maybe it's only metaphorical. And to me, it doesn't really matter in the end. What matters is that addressing it on that level with that context actually does produce clinical results. We can see improvements in people when we can convince them to work on that level. And so in Chinese medicine, we think of it this way. We actually say that there's five major organs related to the five elements. We have lung, heart, spleen, liver, and kidney. And each of those has a kind of a consciousness to it. We call call it the five shen, the five spirits. And so, you know, you'll relate to these in the sense that we talked about the heart shen before, and that's kind of the part of, like, your spirit, the part of you that is, you know, undistinguishable from the spirit within somebody else. So when you, in yoga, when you say namaste, you know, the essential or eternal part of me greets the essential eternal part of you. That's the shen in a nutshell. And then we have the hun spirit of the liver, which is kind of like in esoteric Western terms, the astral body. That's kind of the soul which goes off and dreams and has this kind of consciousness and ego experience. But then there's this body called the po spirit, and that's the etheric body, and that's the energy body. And that really is the part of you that is an energetic walking being, and in some ways kind of unites the physicality of who you are with the soul essence of who you are. It's the bridge between the two. And that's why it's critically important, because anything that happens, it kind of registers there on this energetic level first. So anything that kind of moves or identifies and works with the pathologies that develop within the energy body itself are of extreme importance. I mean, it's the bread and butter of traditional Chinese medicine, as it is a lot of Western energetic systems, like, say, like bioresonance. And so if we were to conceive of trauma as being something that causes a disruption within the energy body, then we address it on that level. And we can do that through a number of different therapies, but ultimately what it boils down to is that we can get results from doing things on an energetic level. I'll give you an example. You know, a lot of people might be familiar with an older therapy called EFT or meridian tapping, and there's actually a newer one called AIT, which is specifically used for treating traumas. But the idea that if you're tapping on energy meridians of the body or holding your hand over certain, you know, energy centers called chakras from the Ayurvedic system, while you are offering, you know, different phrases or eliciting certain emotional responses, that there's a way you can discharge those emotions and you could work through the kind of energetic blockage. And it can be profound. People don't even need to come to me and get acupuncture needles. I mean, you can do this just by tapping on the body while thinking about certain events that have happened to you or having an emotion that comes to mind. So things that kind of move that through you in that way, yeah, absolutely. I mean, that to me is, these are really important therapies that can be used alongside safely, practically everything else that a person is doing.
It just strikes me that it's so powerful, but there's no, like, you know, from a Western standpoint, no side effect. I mean, you're not talking about taking a medicine that's going to have an untoward effect that you can't control. I mean, it's about the person too, right? So it's the person taking charge as opposed to take a pill and hope that it works. It just seems to me that because you're present in it, you're controlling the potency of it. And it's nothing like having control. It just gives you, I think, less anxiety because you have some power over something instead of it happening to you. And I would think too, correct me if I'm wrong, but if somebody does say goes through a traditional treatment for a cancer, for example, would it be beneficial for that person to also go to the cellular level to try to dig deeper so that it doesn't recur? Is that reasonable to think?
Absolutely. Yeah, and for sure, we get the best outcomes when we leverage the best of both worlds, and that's what integrative oncology is. Now, I mean, we can argue and, you know, debate the benefits and the risks of doing a lot of conventional therapies such as chemotherapy and what have you. But, I mean, between surgery and immunotherapies, I mean, there are some excellent therapies that are out there that should be leveraged, and I think people get a diagnosis should get multiple opinions and see what conventional oncologists have to offer and see what makes the most sense to them. But that does not exclude a person also getting holistic therapies that can help in a number of different ways like we've been speaking. And so I look at it this way. I mean, an oncologist is a disease expert. You go to them to understand the nature of the disease process. But every person should also have a health expert, just as much as they have a disease expert. And that health expert can be someone who's trained in integrative oncology, who has understanding of how the body works, can speak to them about nutrition, about lifestyle modification, about exercise, about stress modification, about working through traumas. And fundamentally, anything that makes you feel stronger, to me, is an anti-cancer strategy. it doesn't matter if it's it's not specifically targeting cancer cells. If it's making your body stronger, if it's making you feel like you want to be here tomorrow and be in the world for the long haul, it's an anti-cancer strategy. So, you know, we should not think lightly about things that really help you show up. Things, and that's really, to me, the power of mindset. It's nothing magical. Mindset is what are the things that really empower you in the moment to show up, to do the things you want to do, to be in the world. I mean, think of how fundamentally trauma affects us. We check out. I mean, that's what disassociation is. Mm-hmm. When we have those freeze responses, there's a part of the soul that's kind of left behind. Well, what happens when we reclaim that part of our soul? We are more engaged. We want to be here. We want to share that, love and forgiveness with the people around us. And that's what I'm after. And to me, that matters more than what specific therapies one of my patients is going to ultimately choose. What I want to hear from them is that they're engaged, they're not waffling back and forth, and that they're 100% behind whatever they're choosing to do. And to me, you can really conjure that up in people if we're leveraging a lot of these holistic therapies.
Well, it also is wonderful. There's so many varieties. Not every size fits all, but there's something that will appeal, seems to me, to everybody's psyche, everybody's what makes them happy or tick, that sort of thing. I mean, I like all of them. I would try all of them, frankly, and I agree with you.
And it doesn't need to be exotic. I mean, think of something as simple as massage therapy, right? And just think of the act of someone who's been recently diagnosed and they've got a lot on their mind. They've got a lot of decisions to make. And just going to massage therapist and the gentle act of just physical touch to ground them and then bring them back on their body. That alone is just can be a profound somatic experience for them to say, here's where I'm at. This is what I'm feeling now. I'm feeling more present in that moment. Right. That's it. That, to me, that can be something that anyone can theoretically have access to without going into all these other, more elaborate therapies.
What about, with that in mind then, what about the emotion of forgiveness and gratitude? How do those two, if you're able to cultivate them and really be in them, does that help as well?
Yeah, and it helps everything. And I don't want to sound like a panacea, but here's why. Curing is different than healing, right? Curing is the amelioration of a disease process. Healing is being a fundamentally stronger person on the other side of what you're going through. You can be on your deathbed from an illness that is incurable, but be experiencing healing progressively, even to your last breath, right? And so what does that look like? Well, that often looks like forgiveness of oneself and others. What does that look like? It often feels like, I'm more in love with this moment, even if it's my last few moments on the planet, and I'm more in love with the people that are around me. That's what it looks like. So that you perfectly described what healing really is and why that is so key to just why we're here as human beings on this planet, right?
Absolutely. I wish people would tap into that more. It's not reactionary. It is from within. How do we turn people's energy from thinking about things on a surface and letting surface things that really don't matter, or having people think about who you are, but they don't know you? I mean, sorry, go ahead.
Let me say this is, don't wait to your deathbed. That's the reality. It's so true. I mean, there are so many ways that we can distract ourselves from being present with ourselves and the people around us. So, just don't wait. Don't wait for the wake-up call of an illness. And that's what, I honestly think of cancer as being a teacher for me. I don't look at it as an adversary that I had to overcome. I thought of it something that really brought me fully present in who I am and why I want to be here. And if you can do that, and it doesn't matter what the disease is. It could be an autoimmune disease. It could be whatever. It doesn't matter. Whatever is put before you, if you can use that as a pivot point and say, how does this make me a better person? How can I grow stronger, more resilient? How can I practice more forgiveness? Then I think now we got a game. We're on the right level. We're looking at it the right way. We're not some we're not mechanistically thinking that we're just some body that needs to be fixed. Yes, there are definitely procedures and things you're going to want to do that are going to help towards the curing process. You know, that's part of the deal. But at the same time, if you're doing that at the expense of really embracing the true healing on all levels, physical, mental, emotional, spiritual, I think you're missing the boat.
Well, it's just, those are just scratching the surface, aren't they? As opposed to having the courage to get to know yourself. And we're going to take our last break, but I want to ask that question when we come back. So let's take that break and come back. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living the Solution. We're speaking with Mr. Brandon LaGreca, and he's the author of several books, Cancer and EMF Radiation, Cancer Stress and Mindset, and Cancer Trauma and Emotions. And before the break, Brandon, I was curious to know your take on the courage it takes to be honest with yourself. Obviously, forgiveness is key, but you can't forgive if you're not going to be honest, can you?
That's very true. I think the core of honesty is, what makes you alive? What brings you out? I was thinking about this recently. I was just looking at the data at the blue zones, and these are areas where people, live into their 90s and 100s, more than the average. And blue zones all have four things in common. They have a really healthy local, organic diet for the most part. They have activity levels that people are, whether it's even gardening or fishing, they're not sitting around in their old age. But the other two are much more subtle. The other two are strong community support. And the last one's life purpose. Why are you here? it's in some ways you can see the decline in our elderly population when they don't feel like they matter anymore, as opposed to in these places, maybe they're small villages. Okinawa is one example of a blue zone where they have strong community support. They have a lot of people they connect with in their village, and they have purpose. They have something that they want to get up and do every day. That's not to be underestimated. Now, you can be someone in your 20s and 30s, stuck in a job you don't like, wasting your time with or certain addictions and, scrolling through social media and all these kind of things. It's the walking dead. You could be alive but not be present. And that's where I think the brutal honesty comes in, which is, how are you not showing up and what do you need to do differently? It's a question that I ask patients all the time. In some ways you can say, if you can wave a magic wand, how would you change your life now? What does that look like? And then if someone gets fired up around that, yeah, we're going to see changes in them. Absolutely.
Yeah, I wonder if that's part of what's making us as a society worldwide more ill, because it doesn't seem that there's value in being human anymore. I mean, we're being told that, for example, AI is the thing of the future and we should want to be like that or have that incorporated into us as if we're not, everybody's imperfect, but they have the ability to move towards being perfect in their own way. And it just seems like it's just top down, outside telling you your worth and your value. And it seems to be dwindling as we speak.
Yeah, and I think in some ways the story of cancer, and why we're seeing increased incidence of cancer and even in younger people is really twofold. I'll go back to what I was saying originally, the how, the why, the who of cancer. And there's no doubt that we have a tremendous amount of environmental pressure. I mean, the proliferation of electromagnetic fields, the increase of chemical exposure, whether it be herbicides, pesticides, these forever chemicals, so on and so forth. But it's also the fact that people are, in some ways, are lonelier than ever. We don't have good, strong social connections anymore. We don't have good, strong family groups anymore. Social media is not a substitute for good social interaction. So it's very easy to be alone in a big city these days. Absolutely. You can walk through New York City absolutely nameless and with very little interaction, be surrounded by people and feel utterly alone. And so I think it's the combination of these two things. It's the increased stresses on our body in so many different ways, both physically and mentally. It's the traumas that we encounter and then not having the social kind of network. We need to really fully heal them and embrace this kind of concept of post-traumatic growth. All these things coming together like a web is what I think is really underlying this increase of chronic illness the way that we see it.
So on average, when you see your patients, I wonder what percentage are feeling that emotional loneliness, that disconnection, that I don't really matter kind of underlying mindset. Is that something that you see as a prevalent issue when people come to see you?
I think it's fairly common, unfortunately, yeah.
That's sad.
It's something that we're struggling with. It is, absolutely. And, you know, in some small ways, even just talking with me for a few minutes and hearing their story and feeling seen and heard can be a big deal for these folks.
Mm-hmm. I find that too, you know, from a patient standpoint, just listening. I don't think people take the time to be present and listen to each other. It's how are you, but what about me? Kind of narcissistic kind of mentality that everything's about me and you should, you know, glory in me kind of thing. But it's weird too, because the people who feel that way don't really feel good about themselves either. So it's like emotional disconnect between I think I'm awesome but I really don't, and I need validation to give me that confirmation. But
it's another fallout, I feel like, of social media, where people feel like they put all their self-worth on likes and mm-hmm. such, and how their appearance is in this kind of artificial world. I got to tell you, I totally just completely signed out of all social media accounts several years ago, and I've been happier for it. I have some stuff that's business related that I have an office manager attends to, but for me personally, no, I find zero connection there anymore. And you know what, I have more time with them. I have more time with my family. I have more time to read and learn. I have more time to be in nature. Those things are tremendously valuable, and I'll put an extra emphasis on the nature one that I just mentioned, because I think living in a technological world, you know, there's such a thing as nature deficit disorder, right? Fancy word, but it really just means we're not really getting connected to the earth. And that, to me, is in some ways kind of really the core of it. Chinese medicine, we say the cause of all disease is an imbalance with nature and natural rhythms. And that can look like many things. That can look like I'm only sleeping 6 hours a night and eating processed food. So, of course, I'm imbalanced with natural rhythms. But just the question behind the question there, you know, what's causing us to be imbalanced with nature? Well, it's not having a spiritual alignment. It's not having the experience of walking out in the woods and feeling I am connected to everything around me. I'm breathing the same air that tree is exhaling. You know, it's mm-hmm. to have that experience of being connected with the natural world around you is, to me, the ultimate form of medicine, because that then informs everything else that comes out of you. You know, you could have a million decisions about how to attend to your health care, but if you're not coming from a grounded place of saying, what is fundamentally a natural rhythm for me, what I need to be experiencing, you may miss the boat. But you very likely will not if you are grounded in nature and natural rhythms, you know, going back to basics of human health and why we're here. So as much as possible, yeah, get out from behind the screen, get out in nature, breathe some fresh air, you know, and just kind of reconnect.
I mean, from a cellular standpoint, that's an energetic field, is it not? I mean, the negative ions that you're going to take in can complement what you're lacking so that you become more centered, rounded, whole. Is that some way you can think about it?
Absolutely. We're electromagnetic beings. And, you know, we evolved in a negative ion environment. If you look at the Earth like a battery, you know, the surface of the Earth is negatively charged, and high up in the ionosphere is really positively charged, and the differential between the two is what causes lightning strikes. But, you know, we're hanging out down here on the surface of the Earth where it's negatively charged. Of course, what have we gotten since modern electrification? We've got all these devices and things that are plugged in and wires in our house, which are producing all this positive ions, right? So we need to kind of discharge that and get the opposite. And, you know, everyone knows walking in a beach, you got the sand, you're walking barefoot, you've got the waves crashing. There's just all this negative ions in the air. You're absorbing them through your feet. And you feel great. You have the sun shining on you. Mm-hmm. It all makes sense in that moment. Well, it's not that difficult. I mean, you could recreate that walking through a forest. You can even create that walking through a park. You know, anywhere where you can kind of reconnect with nature in that way, you're going to benefit.
Everything that you're describing is free. I mean, you can just do this and maybe 20 minutes a time, you know, maybe once a week, something start off slow, but it's, I would say it should be feeling like an addictive in the sense that this one thing makes me feel so good, and then I can go back and jump in and not and be more resilient and not let things take me away from my center. But you have to get it first, don't you?
I'll tell you a practice that I started, and I've been doing it about a year now, which is I get up, I kind of do my meditation first. It's always my thing. But once I've done my meditation, the sun's rising, I go outside and I do some stretches. Now, I could do those stretches inside, but even in the middle of the winter, I kept this up, which in Wisconsin is no small thing. But I would go outside and I would look towards the sunrise. I'd get my morning light, the photons from the sun coming at me, and I would do some stretching. Even that 10, 15 minutes, you're resetting your circadian rhythm that way by getting that light cue. You're getting some fresh air. You're doing your stretches at the same time. You're stacking all these good habits. But even that simple practice, getting some fresh air 10 minutes in the morning, and now we have a kitten, and she follows me outside and just, kind of does figure eights around my feet while I'm doing stretches. So, everyone gets involved. It's a fun thing. But even something simple as that. And you know what? My phone doesn't even become operational. I don't turn on my computers until an hour or two later. I take that first hour of the day at least to reconnect, do my meditation, do my prayer practice, get outside, get some fresh air, get some sunshine. You would be amazed what 1 hour can do to set the, even if the whole rest of your day is just all sorts of things that you have to attend to, that 1 hour a day can hold you. It's amazing how well that can work.
It sounds like heaven, frankly. And I mean, we spend so much time doing things that are against our health. What you just described is something that, you're doing it for yourself, and you're empowering yourself, and you're helping your body feel better. I mean, that's got to be something that once you have that feeling, you do not want to give it up.
Absolutely. And, there's the term vicious cycle, right? But there's the opposite term. There's a virtuous cycle that as you do more of these things, it feeds into a positive feedback loop, and then you want to do it more. And so, it has become like clockwork for me. I don't want to miss my meditation in the morning because how nourishing it is. It seems like something is missing when I don't do it. And it really does set the pace for the whole day. So I would just tell people, even if it's just starting for 5 minutes, even if it's starting for 30 seconds, even if you get up, but before you turn on your cell phone, if you go to the couch and spend 1 minute just sitting with your eyes closed and doing a few deep breaths, and maybe next week you do it for 2 minutes, something as simple as that, just slowly accruing over time, you're going to have a different relationship with your body. You're going to have a different relationship to time and to how you relate to your own, empowerment.
So you mentioned breathing. Is breath work something that people should adopt? I mean, it's one thing that can calm your sympathetic system, rev up your parasympathetic system. Can it?
Absolutely. Yeah. One of my favorite ones is a very simple one, just called box breathing. If you think of your inhalation, your exhalation, and the pause between those two as being like a box, and you want to even out the interval, you would say, look, choose 4 or 5 seconds. You can inhale for 4 or 5 seconds. You can hold 4 or 5 seconds. Exhale for the same amount of time, and then hold after the exhalation for 4 or 5 seconds, and then repeat. So it's forming like a box in the rhythm. I do that every morning. It's something very simple, and you can elongate it depending on how long you can hold your breath. So I kind of do it around closer to 7 seconds, but you do that for a minute or two. Wow, you're just suddenly a little more calm. You just feel a little bit more grounded. You feel like in your body like you weren't before just because you're following your breath. Simple practices with very big payoffs if you do them regularly and over time.
These are things that don't cost anything. You don't need anybody to help you. And it's, again, to lack of a better way to put it, it's empowerment. And it's getting to know yourself and your body. And I think if people spent a little bit more time doing that, they'd be less buffeted by what's coming at them. It's almost like you're on a yo-yo emotionally. If you watch TV, if you watch the news, you feel... I stopped watching the news basically because I felt bad after watching it. And like yourself, as soon as I took a step away, I just feel much better. this is all artificial in a sense. It's designed to get emotional rise, and it's designed to keep us on edge, I think.
Absolutely. And I've actually done a media blackout for some time for the exact same reason. I mean, there's ways that you can still stay engaged and not really have to go through the sensationalism in most media channels.
Well, you know, time goes way too fast. I want to make sure people know how to get your books, how to follow you, you know, go to your website. And I don't know if you're still seeing patients or not, but if that's something that you offer, how can people engage with you and get your books?
Sure. So my author website is brandonlagreca.com, and my last name is spelled LAGRECA.com. And you can go there. That's where you can read from my blog. You can certainly purchase the books there, and you know, just kind of find out generally what I'm doing. If you want to sign up for my newsletter, you're welcome to do that. I just do that once a month. I don't bombard people, but just once a month, I'll just kind of send you what I'm thinking about and whatever the latest blog post is. So that's a fun way to connect as well. I'd be happy to engage people there.
Excellent. I want to thank you so much for joining me today, because it was just a real pleasant, grounding experience for me. I really loved it.
It's always an honor to talk with you, Dr. George. Thank you for everything that you do.
Oh, thank you. And thank you, everybody, for living in the solution.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.